The Nick Abbott Habit.
There was a huge amount of news this week, but no one was paying any attention because all anyone could talk about was some dipstick screaming her face off during the last point of a tennis match, like someone had yanked off her sticky-back merkin right there on the centre court. It was at the very tense moment, at the climax of a match that was being fought by one woman that not a single person in the land had heard of 3 days ago, but on whose shoulders rested the happiness of the country. The two players were Simone Halep and Joanna Konta, one of whom is English. Andy Murray also won a match, and he is English too, except for when he loses, when he's Scottish. I grew up in Scotland, and believe me, that kind of thing irks your average Scot more than a little, and in my experience, the Scots are forever on the verge of being irked, so don't test their patience, or they'll tell you to go away and boil your head. Anyway, Joanna Konta and Simone Halep were at it, in a thrilling encounter rendered totally boring because it was tennis. I can't believe tennis is still a thing. It was a pastime for toffs to while away the hours between abusing pheasants and shooting peasants, and no one screamed or yelled because it wasn't something to get excited about. They didn't even take their jackets and ties off to play it. These days, it's a freak show of grunting 7-foot robots who look like they'd be having as much fun getting a barium enema. And on match point, this woman in the crowd let rip with the kind of scream that tennis players themselves often use when they are hitting the ball back to put off the opposition. They scream like they're having the best orgasm in their lives every time they whack the ball back. If you lived next door to them and they actually did sound like that when they were having sex, you'd have to jab knitting needles in your ears to make it stop. And the Twitter sphere went bananas, saying that the screaming woman in the crowd was indicative of the rudeness that abounds in the modern world and how no one knows how to behave anymore, and that the episode signalled the end of manners in this country. And I don't know whose feeds those Twitter users are used to seeing or whether they ever get out of the house. But I called the end of modern manners when the authorities conspired to keep the Sex Pistols off the top of the charts with God Save the Queen during a Jubilee week in 1977. Rude. They made it so that Rod Blummin' Stewart remained at the top with some dirge from his spandex years. And no, Rod, no one thinks you're sexy, and we do not want to touch your body. I'm just letting you know. So Konta won, and Britain smiled again for the first time since the Prime Minister went to the G20 and said that her primary goals were free trade and fighting terrorism in the episode called Theresa Does Hamburg. She went along for the prestigious G20 summit and street riot to see the leaders of the top 20 nations, as voted for by the readers of What Country magazine, who all fly in to Hamburg on the enormous, highly polluting, taxpayer-funded planes at great cost to the environment, with the kind of entourage that the rapper Diddy Diddy Puff Dog would expect, to discuss very important things that they presumably can't talk about for nothing over the phone. It's a good job they weren't going there to discuss climate change, because that would be ridiculous. In other news, they were going there to talk about climate change. The PM bot flew into the North German city of Hamburg with her husband Philip May and her Chancellor, Philip Hammond. I get that she took her Chancellor. He would have important things to say to people who only speak English as a foreign language, but who are fully conversant with the international language of money. But why did the husband have to tag along? He was only going to get stuck with the wives and sent to look at displays on traditional German lederhosen manufacture and taken on shopping trips to stock up on Teutonic knickknacks. And you might think that he looks like an ineffectual who spends his time ironing the good lady wife's support hose, but Mr. M is a city insider. He's an executive at a financial institution that controls £1.4 trillion in assets, which is a number so big I couldn't write it down in numbers. The other male spouse of the assembled world leaders was Mr. Angela Merkel, who is a professor of quantum chemistry, whatever that means. What are they going to have in common with Melania Trump? Apart from not wanting to have sex with Donald. Why do they get the spouses to come along to an international business meeting like Wags to a football tournament? The chief executive of a company doesn't take their other half to a work conference. They're expected to be able to cope for a day without them. Plus, why hire a totally hot secretary when you're dragging the spouse along for the trip? And if you pictured that as a male boss availing himself of his lovely female secretary, that's on you, because I didn't mention the sex of the boss or the secretary, because women can be sexist, manipulative pigs too, you know. At the meeting, Theresa May said she would be championing free trade. She said that with a straight face, which must have taken some doing, even for a robot. This is the woman who wants to extricate us with great vengeance from the biggest free trade bloc on Earth, and now claims she wants to champion free trade. If I'd made that up, you wouldn't have believed me. The other thing she said was that she wanted to push for tougher action on terrorism, which is also odd coming from a person that's just given £1 billion to a political party with connections to terrorism in Northern Ireland and who signs massive arms deals with Saudi Arabia, the place that has terrorism as one of its two great exports. Over here, the British press have scented blood in the water ever since she called that snap election and failed by not winning enough. And they're helpfully describing the PM as a wounded animal and a diminished figure on the world stage. One of the press corps asked if she thought that other leaders would pay attention to her, given that a vet would have put her out of her misery weeks ago. And the Premier said, "Yes, we will be playing our absolute full part, and I will be playing my full part." So, nothing robotic about that then. She said, "We will be playing our absolute full part, and she will be playing her full part, absolutely. Her part will be absolute and full, and she will absolutely be playing her part fully and absolutely." And then she went into standby mode to conserve her batteries. Poor Mrs. M. So out of place and forlorn on the world stage, but it's not her fault. OK, some of it's her fault, but mostly it's David Cameron's fault. You remember David Cameron, don't you? He's the chap that used to frighten children on public beaches by sashaying around in a wetsuit two sizes too small, like a burst sausage. He's the one that brought us the delights of Brexit, since when Britain has been demoted from the top table, despite us having nukes and a new warship and everything. Donald Trump was also there at the G20, but the assembled dignitaries were trying their best to ignore him, which was as easy as ignoring a masturbating chimp in the ape house at the zoo. Outside of the states that he holds his rallies in, he's regarded as a big orange gorilla of limited intelligence that you have to pacify with flattery, or he might get angry and pull your arms off. So this G20 meeting was dominated by the rockstar politicians, cementing their bromance. It was the Canadian Justin Trudeau and French Emmanuel Macron show with an Angela Merkel sandwich filling. Most of the world leaders were cozying up to those three and trying to put as much distance as possible between them and Donald Trump in case he started talking to them. But Donnie doesn't like shade, so he tried to steal the limelight with one of his apocalyptic speeches about everything being a disaster, which he read out in English in Poland. He warned that the future of Western civilization was at stake and the West must decide that if it has the will to survive. It was the opposite of the JFK speech when he addressed the Germans in 1963 by saying, "Ich bin ein Berliner," which went into folklore as it could have meant, "I am a jelly donut." Well, Donald Trump could have said, "Er ist ein Buzzkill," which could translate as, "I am a giant orange dipshit." He did as usual and lashed out at anyone he could think of, from Islamic terrorists to Russia to whoever does the breakfast show on CNN. And that was comical too. When he said that Russia was a hostile force, he winked so hard he sprained his hairdo. And weirdly, the whole speech was greeted with enthusiasm bordering on ecstasy by his Polish audience, who cheered his every doom-laden message and chanted his name, which made the Donald stop to give one of his dental advert grins and just lapped up the adulation like a five-year-old who's just done a party piece at a wedding. People chanting his name is his favourite sound. And the reason the crowd was so appreciative was that he had got the Polish authorities to bus in large numbers of people who were given US flags and banners and instructed to cheer. They put posters and adverts up to get people to cram the square where he was going to speak. Trump's people manage their man like the parents of a toddler. They take a dummy and some snacks and something to keep him entertained in case he goes ape and starts a war with North Korea or Miss Universe. Praise is the number two thing he likes to be showered with. The first thing he likes to be showered with is also number two, according to the Russian videotape that doesn't exist, of course, because it never happened. Goodness me, no. Whatever gave you that idea? He was basking in the attention before the rally had even happened, that basker. Just before he was about to thrill the specially assembled throng with his talk of imminent Armageddon, he said, "I hear we have a big crowd. It's huge." He's still on about crowd size. And I don't think we need Dr. Freud to analyse that. Stand down, Sigmund. We've got this one. He's like that fat robot in Lost in Space, always waving his arms around, shouting, "Danger! Danger!" Well, we're in danger, all right, mostly because of you, you great orange galumph. But he did return the favour after Theresa May helped him down that ramp when she was in Washington. He said, "After she helped me down that scary ramp, I will never forget what's her name." And he threw her a lifeline in her bid to cling on to the top job when he said that the US and Britain land would seal a trade deal very, very quickly. He said new trading arrangements with Britain would be very powerful, He actually said that like he was describing a firework or a pickup truck. He said, it's going to be tremendous and great, not a disaster like now, but huge and very successful. He didn't give any detail about this huge and tremendous trade deal, mostly because he has no idea what he's talking about. At this point, unless he's reading off an auto cue, he's just a random sound generator. He said, there is no country that could possibly be closer than our two countries. He said, we've been working on a trade deal which will be very, very big, a very powerful deal, great for both countries, and I think we will have done that very, very quickly, which is five uses of the word very in one sentence, which is very, 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 very stupid. You have to remember that everything that Donald Trump says is to get praise from his immediate audience. He doesn't actually mean any of it. How could he? Everything is either a disaster or tremendous. There's nothing in between, which means that everything he says is totally meaningless. And much of it he says just so that people will keep looking at him and so that he remains the center of attention. And also, if he keeps talking, no one can ask him anything. So it appears as though he's in control, or so he thinks. Like when he and his close personal friend that he has never met or spoken to or heard of and who he has absolutely no deals with, Vladimir Putin. They were both sat there for the cameras and Putin just quietly occupied his chair like a grown-up, while Donald Trump was perched on the edge of his, blabbing away about the meeting being tremendous and very great and how they talked about a lot of things and how tremendous and great it all was and on, as though if he stopped talking, everyone would realise how out of his depth he is. So he just keeps yakking on. And he said a trade deal would be agreed very, very quickly between the US and Britain. But we can't agree a trade deal till we're out the EU for a start. And that won't be until at least 2019, which isn't that quick. And second, trade deals are never agreed quickly, even the ones that are about just one thing. The US-EU trade talks have been going on for 4 years now with zero progress. They can't even decide what temperature they want the air conditioning set to in the conference room. So Donald Trump blurting out that a trade deal with the UK will be tremendous and great and very, very quick was just to get a positive response from his immediate audience, who at the time was Theresa May. And she was only sat next to him because all the other leaders at the G20 had nabbed seats at the table as far away from Donny as they could get. So she was stuck in the corner with him, like the unpopular kids at school. Poor Theresa May. How'd you like being Prime Minister so far, Mrs. M? Even her own party are talking dirt about her behind her back. One of the Conservatives in government told the Sun newspaper that the party was tired of seeing the PM being pushed around like a rag doll and that she was a horse with a broken leg. Well, make up your mind. What is she, a rag doll or a horse? Doesn't really matter, I suppose. Old rag dolls are put on the shelf at the back of charity shops and horses with broken legs get shot. So which do you want, Mrs. M, to be forgotten or killed? Those are your choices. Makes you wonder why anyone would want to be the Prime Minister in the first place. Seems like a pretty rum job to me. You lurch from one disaster to the next and everyone is shouting at you all the time. Who'd want to do that in their right mind? You'd have to be off your chump. And yet the names of her replacement are being bandied about like they might be on the cusp of winning a prize. Priti Patel and Sajid Javid are top of the pile, apparently. But if either of those two become the next leader of the Conservative Party, then we will have truly stepped through the looking glass and be hanging out with Alice. I would have expected someone more... how shall I put this? English sounding. Yeah, that's it. Someone a little less frightening to the aged Tory voter with their lace doilies and their huge maximum security Hessian underpants. They aren't going to go for someone called Patel or Javid. I mean, what next? A game show host in the White House? No, the Tories want someone properly British but not too posh. So Jacob Rees-Mogg is out because he makes the Queen sound like a bin man. They want a down-to-earth person, not woman. Not two in a row. A man who embodies the hopes and aspirations of the ordinary average worker. How about Alexander Boris de Pfeffel Johnson? Millionaire, old Etonian, born in America of German and Turkish descent, relative of King George II, Prince Paul of Württemberg, and King William I of Prussia. What's not salt-of-the-earth British about that? I think the Tories are screwed. Especially after Uncle Jeremy Corbyn scored so well in the last popularity contest that Theresa May called in the expectation of winning big. The press are so furious that Uncle Jez's star is on the rise that they've stooped to criticising his dancing skills. The Daily Mail actually published the story with accompanying video evidence that Jeremy Corbyn can't dance to the song YMCA under the headline, Clueless Jeremy Corbyn's bid to dance to the village people's disco classic fails spectacularly. I'm not making that up. They were actually furious that the ancient leader of the Labour Party screwed up the dance moves associated with a song that is everything the Daily Mail stands against. It was on stage at the Durham Miners Gala, and one of the Umpa bands parading past broke into YMCA by the Village People, and Jezza was filmed trying out his moves that appeared not to be the prescribed actions that are supposed to go with that song. The Mail said he seemed completely unaware of the arm movements that go with that song, as though that was surprising of a man approaching 100 years old. It's surprising that he can put his arms over his head without dislocating his shoulder. He's old, he's straight, and I bet the last time he listened to pop music, Lonnie Donegan was top of the pops. Speaking of which, there's a radio station in Mansfield called Mansfield 103.2, which claims to broadcast to Mansfield, Bolsover and Sherwood. None of which, I believe, are real places. I think they just made them up. But they've got a bigger problem than me not believing they exist. Someone's been parking a van near their studios and, by some miracle of science, taking over their airwaves to play a song called I'm a W***er, which should really be at the top of every DJ's playlist. It's happened a dozen times in the past 3 months, apparently, and there's nothing they can do about it. They don't know who it is that's pirating their signal, and they can only stop them if they catch them at it. Which they haven't. So they'll have some nice thing by Patsy Cline on the radio, for instance, then in comes the Whackers song by Ivor Biggin, a name I'm not making up. That's the artist's actual name. Sample lyrics, I'm a Whacker, I'm a Whacker, and it does me good like it bloody well should. I'm a Whacker, I'm a Whacker, and I'm always pulling my pud. Which, of course, is not funny at all. And it's happening to Mansfield 103.2 all the time. They said, we were broadcasting live from Party in the Park, and as soon as we went live, the hacker came on himself singing the W***er song. It was as though he was waiting for us. They said, it's an absolute nightmare. So just think of that when you're finding the job a bit trying, Theresa May. You could be a DJ being drowned out by the W***er song and not being able to do anything about it. And that's it. This podcast is going to take a break for the summer and be back at the end of August. Meanwhile, you can read all my tremendous and huge columns in planet-saving ebook form from the Kindle site on Amazon. The last one is also available in Tree Killer paperback and has a picture of me under attack by a monster from the deep on the front. And I'll be back Friday and Saturday nights at 10 on LBC. Until then, I appreciate your attention.
A Big Things Media production.
Big Things!
She said, we will be playing our absolute full part, and she will be playing her full part absolutely. Her part will be absolute and full, and she will absolutely be playing her... She said, we will be playing our absolute full part, and she will be playing her... She said, we will... She said, we will be playing our absolute full part, and she will be playing her part full...
We'll stick it at the end.